Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two of the Chuck Oliver Show on this Wednesday. And it's the final Wednesday before, folks, it's going to look like the Oklahoma land rush. April 16th, the portal opens, and it will be the first of all, it's more normal than ever for kids to transfer. But it will be the first portal window where the NCAA has essentially gone palms up. We're out. Any kid can transfer, as long as the academic stuff is in line, any kid can transfer anywhere he wants, as many times as he wants, and here's the key, for any reason he wants. Straight cash, great degree, whatever it is. Want to welcome on right now from 247 Sports when it comes to the portal. He knows what it is. Chris Hummer, welcome to the show, friend. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. Did I overstate that? You can transfer anywhere you want, as often as you want, as long as you're academically eligible, and it can be for any reason you choose at this point. Is that a pretty streamlined version of it?
Yeah, there's some caveats, but that's pretty accurate to where we are right now. It's free agency all the time.
Are the caveats inter-conference transfers, or are even those just normal as all now?
So the transfer windows still apply, right? So you can only transfer for a 30-day window in the winter or a 15-day window in the spring, which starts April 16th. Players that are graduate transfers can transfer anytime, so you can remove those restrictions for them. And then, yes, like you said, the interconference transfer rule is pretty notable. The SEC is really the only league that does it like that anymore. They have a rule where you can't transfer within the league after the first transfer portal window. So if you're an SEC fan and you see a notable player from the SEC go in the portal, you can just forget about it because your team can't sign them.
Let's talk about the SEC and what used to be the West, I guess. Everybody looks at Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss and how they work the portal, and Lord, they do a great job. Keep going. Mike Elko has shown no hesitation to completely revamp his roster. Where are they now ahead of the spring portal window?
Texas A&M?
Yep.
Yeah, the Aggies, I think, could probably use an upgrade along the defensive line. They obviously lost a ton of pieces in the offseason, but I think Mike Elko and that staff have done a really smart job of just adding players via the portal that can help them short and long term. I think it's a mistake to go really high school heavy when you sign that transition class, and they've been very aggressive at addressing needs on that roster. I think they've signed 24 transfers so far, yep, and I certainly expect them to sign a couple more here in the spring.
Well, as far as signing the couple more, a lot of the eyes are on Tuscaloosa. Kalen DeBoer will get out of his first spring practice, and then he'll go shopping like everybody else. Any particular position groups or even individuals that maybe you want to speculate about?
Position groups, definitely. There's absolutely a need at cornerback for Alabama. I need them. They don't have enough. Obviously, Alabama was helped by adding Keon Saab at safety / nickel from Michigan, kind of at the last second, last winter. But Alabama certainly needs an upgrade there. I think Alabama needs additional help along the offensive line. I could see a world in which Alabama also maybe looks at a quarterback, depending on how that room shakes out. Not as a starting level guy, just for some depth. So, yeah, I think those positions are all going to be critical for Alabama.
Does the offensive line include Caden Proctor? Is that a done deal? Like, have we already moved? Hey, that's going to happen. He just has to wait for it to all open?
I mean, I'll never say never with a guy like Caden Proctor, who's now technically getting away with his third school in like 8 months. But I believe he's headed to Alabama, yes. That's what all indications are to this point. So, yeah, I think Caden Proctor will likely be there, and then maybe even an additional offensive lineman because they need some depth.
hitting the highlights from 247 Sports. It's Chris Hummer. He knows all about the portal. All right. I have been told that coming out of high school, quarterbacks and running backs are the two most, I don't know, overpaid, disproportionately paid, name, image, likeness deals for, you know, 18-year-olds. What about running backs in the transfer portal? Because I think Mario Cristobal is going to go looking for a running back. What's the first of all, some specific names if you want to give them, but then also, does just the scale, you don't have to give dollars, but the scale for quarterbacks and running backs, are those two positions as far as transfers also a little out of whack?
I don't think quarterbacks are out of whack because I don't think there's a more valuable position on the field.
Yeah.
Although the ranges in terms of what quarterbacks are paid can vary considerably based on situation in school. Some schools pay quite a bit and are very aggressive. You mentioned one of them just a second ago with Mario Cristobal and the Hurricanes, and some schools do it a different way and don't compensate their quarterbacks so highly. I think you could argue that running backs could be overpaid, but I think a college running back has a much more significant impact than an NFL running back does. The difference between an elite college running back and a good college running back is greater than you might see in the NFL. So for teams that are close to a national championship or close to contention, it makes sense to potentially overpay for one of those. But I think the market's probably more robust for transfer running backs at this point in terms of NIL dollars than it is for high school running backs. I think you're seeing that paradigm really shift over the last year or so.
And wrapped all into that, are you expecting this to just be a rubber stamp? Henry Parrish is going to Oxford?
I should term Ole Miss as the favorite for Henry Parrish right now. I believe so. But I think Ole Miss needs to upgrade that running back room pretty aggressively. And if other options potentially emerge, they could certainly consider them. We obviously saw Damian Martinez from Oregon State go in the portal yesterday, or at least it was reported that he will go in the portal yesterday. And there are some other running backs behind the scenes that are being discussed that would be significant movers on the market. So I will never say it's absolutely going to happen with so much time to go, but I think that is certainly the most likely scenario.
So staying in the ACC, I've been told, watch out for Duke. And when we get to the second portal, and maybe you have a chance to eyeball the program and all that. And I'm like, all right. Now, I'm not asking this trying to lead you, but I say Duke is a smarty pants private school with 8,000 undergrads, and they really love hoops. Is that the environment for a guy to go name, image, likeness shopping? Give me a forecast for how Manny's going to approach this window, and what kind of success do you think he'll have?
Well, I will say this. Not every kid prioritizes name, image, and likeness. There are still players out there that value academics and put a premium on environment and situation. And every player is going to get name, image, and likeness. That ship has sailed. It's just part of the process now, but it's not the number one end all be all for everyone. So Duke is just going to have to recruit players with a different type of priority the same way as Stanford or Northwestern would. And I expect Duke to be aggressive because they have to. I don't think a team has a bigger need in the transfer portal than Duke and offensive linemen. I could see Duke signing 3 to 5 of them in the spring window. They need a lot. So Duke is going to have to be aggressive and just find the right type of guy for them.
But Manny had the successful pitch to Malik Murphy, the quarterback, before the offensive lineman, right?
The thing about the quarterback market is we're going to all see this. It's pretty much dried up at this point. You're going to see some names move, but there's just not a lot of schools looking for Power 5 starters, and you have to move early if you need a quarterback. And for Malik Murphy, who waited just a couple, a week before the transfer portal window closed as Texas was making that playoff run, there just weren't a lot of starting options out there left. And Duke made a lot of sense for him because he had a path to starting, but yeah. Definitely need some offensive linemen to make his job easier.
All right, last thing for you then. And Mike Norvell, and you can talk individually, you can talk big picture. He's cracked the code, man. He's got guys who it's a very well-understood thing. It's a year, maybe two, but this is business, and I'm trying to get into the NFL. How has he resonated his message? Because I'm sure there's a lot of places offering cash in that same message, but Norvell seems to do that as well as anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're starting to see Mike Norvell's roster building strategy balance out a little bit. I always say this with Mike Norvell. At first, the transfer portal for him was a method of survival. And now it's more like a method of contending. So at first he had to take transfers to survive and keep his job. And now it's just to supplement what they already have on their roster. We saw Florida State sign a top 10 high school class this year. I think they're on pace for that again in 2025. So now they get to be more selective in the transfer portal. And what Florida State does as well as anybody is if they have a need and they're too deep, they address it via the portal. And I think that's a very smart way to think about the transfer portal. It's not just for your superstar starters, and Florida State has their share of them, but it's to improve your roster and to make your roster better. And I think Florida State has done that in a very smart way the last couple of years.
Last question for Chris Hummer, 247 Sports. He is the transfer portal guru. All right, so Dabo at Clemson. Everybody knows he took a quarterback. I think wasn't the Bear Bryant's like great-grandson? He took a quarterback. He took a transfer there. I've heard word is, yeah, he's playing footsie now with guys. He just didn't really get into the offensive lineman that he wanted. Have you heard that? Is that accurate that Clemson is way more active now in the portal? It's just not huge numbers like everybody else yet?
I guess it depends on how you define way more active. If, like, not being active at all and then just, like, having a little bit of life is way more active, then I think that's very accurate. Yeah, I think Clemson is at least sniffing around some players, particularly on offense. I think they're still in the mix with an offensive lineman or two in the spring window, potentially. But like Dabo Swinney's going to do what Dabo Swinney does, and that doesn't really involve transfer alignment. That doesn't involve transfer portal players, despite the fact that I really think it could help Clemson's 2024 team. That's just not how Dabo rolls. So like if Clemson was to sign like a transfer offensive lineman, I wouldn't be shocked. I think it's a possibility. But it's certainly not going to be a focus of Clemson, even if they have the need.
It's like playing golf without your wedges. You know, it's like, I'm not going to use everything that everybody else is using. It's just strange to me. Chris, it's great information as always. You're on top of it, brother. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, man.
Chris Hummer, 247 Sport. I just don't get it. I mentioned it yesterday. If you're not using an Australian rules punter, then you're using one of those old guys who kicks it the old way, like the way that's not as good anymore, where the ball doesn't stay in the air as long or travel as far. I like that punt more. I also like big burly punters who, if I want to, I don't know, call a fake, yeah, that's an option now. What did Ohio State just sign, like a 6'7 dude? All right, yeah. I want to do my fake punt with him. So that was what we were talking about either yesterday or Monday. Like, why are you not doing this? And it took me years to come around to this. It's the same thing with the portal, except it didn't take years to come around to it. It took the portal's open and is a real thing now. I'm like, all right, I've come around to it. Go get a 22-year-old instead of a 17-year-old. Sounds good to me. Dabo did take, and I won't confirm, is it Paul Tyson? He was at Alabama and then went to Arizona State. All right. And he's the great-grandson of Bear. So he's the transfer. And he had done it with, was it Hunter Renfro that went to Northwestern? Not Hunter Renfro.
Hunter Johnson.
Hunter Johnson that went to Northwestern and then transferred back because Dabo said, well, I know Hunter, and so we don't have a worry about the fit. Dabo's always about the fit and the culture. That's fine. Fit and culture is really important. I don't need 85 team captains, but fit and culture is valuable. And if you bring a guy back from your program who went to Northwestern for a minute, I guess you don't have those questions, but you're really not using every club in your bag.
Yeah, and Paul Tyson did. He did 3 years at Bama, then the 1 year at Arizona State, and then over to kind of finish things out there with Clemson, but not certainly your typical transfer. And yes, great-grandson of Bear Bryant. I will say, by the way, if you're not going to play football, a great place to be on the football team and not play football is Tempe, Arizona. My goodness, there's so much to be had there for fun in Tempe at Arizona State. That if you told me I was going to be athletic enough to be on a football team but never good enough to actually play, pick your spot, that would be top three. There's no doubt about it.
You ever hear I don't know, maybe she's famous, an author, but she's still famous, Lisa Birnbach?
Don't think I've heard that one.
She wrote a guide to colleges that I read, and it was sort of a tongue-in-cheek, humorous sort of thing, but I was a senior in high school, and I was trying to like decide for sure where I was going. And I remember reading when I was a senior in high school about Arizona State, the Playboy Girls of the Pac-10 issue. Like, everybody, it didn't matter if it was for high school seniors or grown men adult magazine, everybody had the same view of Arizona State. It's beautiful weather, beautiful girls, great place to attend class. Like, if you have to go to class, which if you're in college, you kind of do, Tempe may be the best place in America to go. Buddy of mine from Brooklyn, like, grew up in Brooklyn, late 70s, early 80s, graduates high school. He said, went to Arizona State. I was like, how did you wind up at Arizona State? He said, because it was Arizona State. He said, I'd never been to Arizona. He said, I'd never really been out of the Northeast. He said, I wanted to get out of the Northeast, and that seemed about as different as possible, and it was. Yeah, Arizona State, fantastic place to and they used to actually kind of host the Fiesta Bowl, didn't they? That was their stadium, Sun Devil Stadium. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we will come back and continue on this Wednesday next.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Well, I knew it hadn't gone great for the ACC when I saw the announcement. Chuck Oliver Show continuing on this Wednesday. If you didn't see the announcement yesterday, the ACC had a little bit of setback in court. And basically what it is the ACC and FSU have been jockeying for either turf, whose turf the lawsuit will be at least threatened on. I don't think we're ever going to have a day in court on this. And Florida State kind of knows that, I think. Like, Florida State doesn't have really any sort of legal leg to stand on other than the people we agreed to do business with. You know, they hadn't done very good business. Now, is it to the point that the conference is bereft and just should be shuttered? Well, Florida State has filed suit against the ACC. The ACC has filed suit against Florida State. Clemson's involved as well. And yesterday in the state of Florida, a judge denied the conference's motion to stay FSU's lawsuit. Basically what that means is we're going to put theirs on the shelf while we decide ours. And a judge in North Carolina had already ruled that, yes, your lawsuit can proceed, even though there's a dueling lawsuit in Florida and then in the state of Florida. And so then the ACC decided, well, let's go for the big message here. And the judge in the state of Florida, everybody loves a home game, said, nah, we'll probably continue with this anyway. The hearing was in Leon County. Do y'all know where Leon County is? It's in North Florida. It's Tallahassee. It's the state capital. Like, if you think Chapel Hill goes over big around the state of North Carolina, folks, it's literally down the street. Down the street. Exit off 10, and it's one long drive straight in. You go past that funny-looking round hotel on the right, and just straight in, and you run into everything. FAMU's down there. So the hearing will continue now because Florida State's lawsuit, full steam ahead, unless something else happens, in 2 weeks. And they're actually going to rule on the ACC's motion to dismiss the case in the state of Florida. So the ACC didn't really get their way to, well, just pause it. Well, you know what? We'll go ahead and file a motion to dismiss it. And so that will get ruled on as well. And that's not going to get dismissed. So the ACC and FSU, again, the ACC has every legal standing here possible. The interesting part that people have already picked up on and talked about, the ACC, they are sandbags. It is cement, man. They are absolutely on good ground. They have introduced language about potential buyouts. The ACC now twice has said, if in the event we did, And so that's seen as the little crack, the little opening for then the other party to start to get aggressive and serious. And so that's where I think this is going to go. But right now it's just ugly.
The other part of that, too, Chuck, is that there has been conversation maybe more with FSU than any other program about the idea of somehow bringing in private equity into the athletics world. There's a lot of people who think that's a very bad idea, but there's also been at least talk down in Tallahassee about that that might be something that they would do.
That we just bought 4% of Florida State Athletics.
Right. So, for example, the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, just because that's one that's been involved in sports. The Saudis own X percent of the FSU athletic department, and they're going to be the ones who would pay the bill for the ACC, and then we'll see. We'll see where it goes. But if you are the ACC and you think somewhere out there there is a lurking big wallet of public equity or private equity, rather, that would pour money in, maybe that's why they're opening that door. A couple of announcements yesterday on the scheduling that I think were interesting. It used to be that the game on Thursday night for the start of the season was – not a showcase game, because the showcase games are going to be on Saturday still, or maybe even on Sunday or Labor Day night. But the game on Thursday night would be maybe a conference game, some programs that wanted a higher profile stage than they normally get. What we've seen now with the conference networks, Chuck, is this trend towards, all right, let's take a crap game, a game that nobody wants to watch, but we'll put it on the conference network on Thursday night. It gets a little bit more attention. And while you're doing it, you also get a chance to get a couple of days extra time to recover before week two. So yesterday the word came down officially. Missouri and Murray State moving to a Thursday night. That'll be your game on the SEC Network August 29th. No one's going to make it their primary game unless you're a Mizzou fan. But if you're the kind of person like we all are, I think, here on this program that's going to have three, four TVs going, you'll put Missouri over in the corner there. But Missouri and Murray State – means Missouri also gets those extra 2 days to get ready for Buffalo, which, you know, huge help there. But the one I did think was interesting, Temple and Oklahoma. Oklahoma playing their first ever Friday night game and their debut in the SEC, going to be Temple at Norman on the night of Friday. And they get the 1 day extra to get ready for Houston, who might actually have a little something. So for Oklahoma, a little chance for a bigger stage for the Temple game than they would have ever gotten.
Yeah, TV, and whether it's the big networks or the boutique networks, have realized that they don't have to give us great games if it's the only game. I remember a lot of Thursday nights. South Carolina was in Nashville a week one where they hosted Texas A&M. That really is not the case anymore.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right. You can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly, because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today. AccentRoofingService.com.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two, Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday. 9 states and 66. Been talking college football 2 hours a day. Pushing a decade now. I appreciate the blessing. G-Day. Boy, that means something to the Georgia fan base. Now, G-Day, Kirby Smart has weaponized the Georgia fan base. And if you had not attended many games in Sanford Stadium over the years or decades, I've been going, my first game was in 83 maybe. The Georgia, it was maybe the most beautiful place to watch a game, the setting, in, especially later in the fall, in the SEC maybe. It wasn't the loudest. It wasn't the toughest. It wasn't a place where you ever looked around and went, what happened to all our timeouts? It is that place now, and I think it started with a spring game. He said, I want 93,000, and there were folks that got turned away. So I want to welcome on right now. We'll talk more modern stuff as well. From the Athens Banner-Herald, when it comes to Georgia, he knows what it is. Mark Weiser, how you doing today, friend?
Doing well. How are you, Chuck?
Nothing but blessed. I want to start with the big picture, because it was G-Day a few years ago. His first spring, he said, 93K day. I want that place packed. And I was there that day. Mark, you were too. They turned away some folks at the door. They got like 95, 96,000 that wanted to get in. Just talk about the when it gets to the regular season, talk about weaponizing that Georgia fan base, because it has become a legitimately tough place, and it's because of Kirby and his demands.
Yeah, I think the fire marshals had to kind of bend some rules, right, to get in more than the allowed capacity. And I guess a couple of years later or whatever it was, that for Notre Dame, they brought in some extra bleachers and stuff. But it certainly was a kind of a showcase for a Kirby Smart era back then. I'd say a little bit less so now because of some of the stadium renovations. I mean, this is the second year in a row where they're going to be, you know, way less than capacity because half the or a good portion of the stands are going to be closed. But it's important for Kirby to showcase to recruits how football matters, you know, 12 months a year, 365 days a year in Athens, in the state, and, you know, good time for everyone to come out and enjoy some football this weekend, in particular before going home and probably watching some Masters.
I have to imagine Carson Beck, that's not what Saturday's about. It's a little bit more about maybe Gunnar Stockton and some of the other kids. Talk Gunnar Stockton specifically, because I look at him and Ty Simpson as two kids who spring may be a little bit of a showcase for them to show how much they've progressed, developed, et cetera. I'm not trying to, like, project anything on a kid, but, I mean, you just look at a situation and, you know, sometimes you wonder.
I think that's fair. I mean, Gunnar showed very well in the Orange Bowl against Florida State. He had, you know, his biggest kind of window of plays, and he made the most of it. I think he threw two touchdowns, more than 100 yards. You know, kind of an up-and-down spring. He admitted to us yesterday. We had a chance to talk to him. And Georgia, you know, Kirby and Mike Bobo, you know, weren't shy to say we were still looking for quarterbacks after they lost the five-star kid to Nebraska. They went out and had a commitment for a day from a UNLV quarterback who I guess ended up going to Southern Cal, I guess it was. So I think, you know, when the portal opens again, you know, they're going to try to get a fourth scholarship quarterback in Athens. And, you know, whether Gunnar Stockton's going to be the guy after Carson Beck, might be a guy that's going to be playing football somewhere else this fall. You know, we'll see what else develops in the 2025 recruiting class.
So I'm talking to buddy up in Athens, and it's after a few practices, and I'm asking about this receiver and this receiver and the tight ends. He's like, yeah, you need to be asking about Colby Young. All right, well, we got a spring game coming up Saturday. Talk about Colby Young. He's a transfer from Miami, and everybody was more interested in London Humphreys and the returning guys and who replaces Brock Bowers, but Colby Young apparently has consistently showed out in practice.
Yeah, so it depends on what roster you look at, how tall he is. Georgia's listing him at 6'3". Miami listed him at 6'5". I think maybe his junior, he spent a year like at a community college before he played big-time college football. I think he might have been even 6'4" there. I don't remember. But he's a lanky guy that is a, you know, playmaker in the red zone, can win one-on-one matchups against Clemson. Had a really big touchdown catch that forced overtime against a guy that's going to go in the first round in the NFL draft from what the projections say. So, you know, Georgia's got three transfer wide receivers, and they have some good guys coming back in Dylan Bell, you know, in the Missouri transfer from last season, Tom Lovett, who's really had a strong spring as well. And then a guy that's been around for 4 or 5 years, Arian Smith, is really showing out too. So, you know, definitely a lot of weapons for Carson Beck that they can roll in there and make some plays.
I've never known Kirby to be sketchy or, you know, kind of operate on the edges of, you know, the rule book or whatever. I remember several years ago when Sammy Watkins had an off-field thing, Dabo's like, yeah, he'll be suspended, but nobody said it had to be the first game. They had a dome game against Auburn. Trevor Etienne, is he suspended, and does it have to be the first game?
So you're saying Kirby might hold him out for Tennessee Tech?
I'm just wondering. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, Kirby is not one to announce specifically that, yeah, we're going to suspend Trevor for the first game, but I think that's the way it's rolling. I mean, I think he almost kind of used the word suspension when he was kind of talking after he got his DUI and reckless driving arrest. I would expect he's not going to be out there against Clemson. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily even Kirby's call. I mean, there are rules in the athletic department and in the university. Now, is it 100% concrete? There probably is some wiggle room, but I would guess that you know, you wouldn't see him out there the first game.
All right, so spring's wrapped up, and it's all but the game. Do you think, in general, the coaching staff, what they looked around walking out on the field, practice one versus where they are now, do you think they, in general, they've accomplished what they wanted, finding out about two spots on the offensive line, maybe depth at linebacker? Like, who's – what do you think they've checked a lot of the boxes?
You know, the depth of the offensive line, I mean, I don't know if they know who the five starters are for sure. I mean, I think they have probably eight guys that they feel like are good enough to win on Saturdays. I mean, left guard and right tackle in particular, yeah. You have multiple guys that could, you know, be the guy between Dylan Fairchild, you know, Tate Rallage at guard there, as well as, you know, number 55 that played a lot last year at right tackle. You know, they also have options there, you know, couple different guys. Xavier Truss has been around for a long time, but you have an up-and-coming guy behind him, a guy that was a five-star freshman as well. So they have their options there. Linebacker, they haven't had Smile Munden this this spring. He's been coming off an injury. They really like what they have, you know, in some of the other guys with Raylan Wilson, with C.J. Allen. I mean, I think that's probably the reason why you see Jamon Dumas Johnson playing at Kentucky this fall, is that there's so much talent there. And they also brought in three top 10 inside linebackers from this incoming class.
Yeah, it's just so impressive. And I wanted you to talk about the two freshmen who had to step in last year and get some snaps. It's supposed to be, and so they benefited. They benefited so much that there was Jamon Dumas Johnson, was he a Butkus semifinalist or something?
A couple years ago, yeah.
And so you talk about Allen and Raylan Wilson in particular.
Yeah, I mean, both those guys, I think, had some kind of growing pains when they were thrown in there early on, you know, due to the injuries that they had to play earlier. But, you know, they made tons of plays and really showed their athleticism. And I think now with having a full spring, you know, knowing that they're the guys and getting all those reps with Smile Munden being limited, that can only help them. So, you know, I do think Dumas Johnson saw the writing on the wall. Now, I don't know if it was an NIL situation and he asked for a certain number and Georgia, you know, didn't want to give him a certain number and Kentucky had more. You know, you never know behind the scenes how those things play out. But, you know, between those guys and some of the guys they have coming in, including Justin Williams, who was, you know, a big-time five-star, I think that inside linebacker spot, no surprise, Glenn Schumann finds them. He sends them to the NFL. He develops them, and he pinpoints the guys coming up in the next recruiting cycle.
All right, Mark, I got to credit you. Jared Wilson, referring to him as 55, that's a very Southern football thing, so that's fantastic. I appreciate you bringing that to the show, man. Mark Weiser from the Athens Banner-Herald, it is always top-notch information and insight. Thank you for making some time today.
All right, good to be with you. See you.
Mark Weiser, great job covering Georgia. Yeah, 55, it's Jared Wilson. I'd ask, like, we had Brooks Austin on, and I was asking him about, was it Jeremy Banks, the Tennessee linebacker? And I'd asked, or he's Beasley, whoever, he's like, is that 44? He's like, yeah, they got stuff. That's a football thing. That's a Southern football thing. I'm sure Bill Belichick did it as well. But, Jared Wilson, one of the other uber recruits on the offensive line, the four stars and the five stars that he gets into the program. And then here's the weird thing. Look at the bottom of a Kirby recruiting class. Do you know who's not the blue chips? There's certain profiles of kids. Like, a kicker's not going to be a four or five star, I think, almost ever, I think. There are certain positions where it's just a lot less likely. He'll take a three-star recruit. You go, what's a three-star doing? Look at the size of the offensive lineman. He'll take a three-star that is under-recruited, or maybe people are thinking Georgia's over-recruiting him. And there is a profile. It'll be even more so than like a Marius Mims, I'm talking. There is a sort of a structure, a physique that Kirby looks at and says there's a chance there. There's a project. There's a maybe. And they'll take the guy. And so just obviously it all works. So Jared Wilson, again, though, next in line, maybe one of those spots because they got a guard spot and they got a tackle spot that they got to figure out. And that's even with having two guys who could have gone to the draft say, yeah, you know what, I'll come back for one more year. And so that happened as well. All right, we're going to take the show's almost over. Quick break, come back, wrap up next.
To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
I'm always so quick to go, go, go. Just being patient and being good with my eyes. I feel like that's a big thing with being an inside backer and playing football in general, just your eyes. You got to make sure your eyes are in the right spot.
Harold Perkins, and he will have his eyes in the right spot, especially if the two tackles or the one tackle. It's going to be an odd front, and he's going to be an inside linebacker, I think. But that's Harold Perkins. He's as talented as maybe any defender in the SEC. He could be. And what they're going to do with him? Here's the challenge. When you get a player, and I've talked about Minka before. Minka showed up in Tuscaloosa, and I've said this, and he's the best player we have at five spots. I was like, really? Tell me the five spots. And a couple of them are near the line of scrimmage. Like, he could start right now. He would be, when he's our best player, there are 11 different positions on defense. He might start at five of them. Okay, well, it seems, you know, let's find one of them, put him out there. Harold Perkins, he is too talented to not be productive. And so there are times when you have a generational sort of guy, and I don't know that Harold Perkins is that, but when you have like that level, start there to bracket it and then kind of work. What do you, you don't make it too intricate. Like, you want the fact that he's a great football player to kind of do the work. Not, and here's the scheme, and here's what we're going to do with him. You can lean on the talent with a guy like Harold Perkins. You don't have to chess match success for Harold Perkins. You just don't. So what I think the expectation is, if he's playing Will, which is the weak side backer or the weak side inside linebacker, if he's in an odd front, this is the challenge, because he still could be outside when that fourth guy walks up and everybody has to slide their responsibilities over one spot. So there's still opportunities. And even if he's inside, and even they run a four-man front and he's right behind the middle of the A-gap, they're going to get him fast forward. Blake Baker is too much of a good defensive coordinator, and there was too much attention paid last year to what didn't obviously happen. Whereas two seasons ago, it was pretty obvious. Harold Perkins run around. He's in the backfield quite a bit. So they've got a plan. You want him to be maximized as much as possible. And so, all right, well, let's get him in the middle of the field then. Maybe sometimes that's not it. I mean, think about it. You had Stingley show up. Stingley as a freshman was as good as any corner. I don't know, maybe in the conference. I can't remember who else was the juniors and seniors that year. But he shows up, and that guy's just a stud. Well, you don't move him to safety. You put him on an island, you take away half the field. I've talked about guys showing up like Jadeveon Clowney. He's a five-star defensive end. Okay. Even the number one player in America. Man, SEC, seen it. Do you know what Jadeveon did? Beginning week two, he began starting. I don't think he started week one because Ellis didn't like starting freshmen, I think. But week two, he started, and like after Derek Barnett the next year. Guys like that show up, you know, well, put him at tackle. No, you put him on the edge and maybe even want to run a wide technique. And then that's where you get your advantage. They're going to treat this half of the field like it's a cliff. We're not going over there. So there's your advantage. With Harold Perkins, the most valuable guy in football is the guy who throws it. All right. Second most valuable guy is the guy who hits the guy who throws it. And that's supposed to be Harold Perkins. And that's not read and react. That's not diagnose. That can be from inside. I mean, alignment, I don't care where you align. I don't care. The scheme, again, I don't really care. As long as it's simple. And not because of any limitation on him, but because simple's better. Do you know why simple's always better? Because you think less. When you think less, you move. Football's about, I've done it so many times in practice that I recognize this. This guy just motioned, and so I watched this on tape. I know what's coming. You've heard players say that before. We repped it in practice. Zach Cunningham, wasn't he like a second-round pick of the Houston Texans? He was an All-American at Vanderbilt. They're in Athens. Kirby's first year. Do we remember? Vanderbilt went into Athens and won. And there was a fourth down play where Zach Cunningham's like, yeah, Derek Mason, he showed us this exact play in practice all week. And I saw it, and he made the tackle on fourth and one, and Vanderbilt gets the – like, he literally said after the game, said, yeah, I knew that play was coming. Now, I don't know, maybe a guy who's good enough to be an All-American and he's smart enough to be at Vanderbilt, okay, you're running uphill if you're going against him on fourth and one. The message holds.
do a few things, do them really well, and let your players loose. Harold Perkins is one of those guys you let loose. So the number one story, maybe on defense, in the entire conference, because we don't care enough about, I say, Florida, will they get better? And then the secondary, when those three freshmen coming back, will they be better? And Marshall, all of that's great. Nobody cares about Florida in a relative sense outside of the Florida fan base, because they're probably going to be 6-6 as the blue sky. People care about LSU, and people really care about Harold Perkins. So that's why we're all paying attention to it. I don't care where you line him up. Just get him beyond the line of scrimmage, and there are a lot of different ways you can do that, whether he's Will, whether he's Mike, whether he's Sam, whether he's a two-point guy, whether you walk him up every single play. I don't know. Call him Jason Taylor if you want. Okay? He's the jack. I don't. Whatever you do with him, get him behind the line of scrimmage, because he's just too good, and that's how he impacts the game, not necessarily diagnosing and then dropping in coverage. Hey!
So, by the time we are doing this show next week on Wednesday, the portal will be open, and you could literally probably spend the full 2 hours just doing nothing but reading and reacting to different kids that are going into the portal. There's one today that's been reported that he'll be in there for LSU. That's Jackson Howard, was a top of 130 recruit in the class of 2023, but apparently going to hit the portal, thought maybe that he might be looking to head back towards the Midwest where he's originally from. The ones I'm interested in, Chuck, are the ones that would always have been expected, even before the portal, to be the kind of kids that would go looking for somewhere after spring. Like Missouri, three kids went in the portal. Tight end named Ryan Horstkamp, defensive lineman Kai Montgomery, running back Michael Cox. If you're saying, I'm not remembering any of those, it's because Horstkamp has three career starts. Montgomery's a former top 450 recruit, and Cox ran for 150 yards back in 2021. These were the guys that used to normally go in the portal after spring, the kids that realized, hey, I'm never going to play here, and it's time to, you know, see if there's somewhere. Maybe it's FCS, maybe it's, you know, MAC or whatever, somewhere I can go. I wonder how many of those guys at this point are you even going to bother, because there's going to be so many kids that are closer to that, like what the kid is from LSU that's in. He'll find a spot. He knows he's going to find a spot. I wonder if we're going to see a lot fewer of the kind of guys that Missouri has there, unless they just got told, hey, guys, you're in the portal. Whether you want to be or not, you're in the portal. I wonder how many of these kind of kids that before would have said, hey, I need to go and find someplace I can play, are going to say, hey, man, I don't think I am going to find somewhere I can play, so I'm not going to take the chance. I'm going to finish out my 4 years here. Maybe at some point I can get the coach to say, oh, you know, you got a neck issue, and get you off the scholarship if we need to. But I just wonder how many of these kids, with all the portal movement we're going to see from guys that do have places to go, how many of the kids that used to be there that would go there that don't have a place to go, or at least aren't confident, say, I'm not going.
And I wonder when the COVID, obviously, that year of eligibility, which I think at the end of the 25 season, so like next December, maybe that COVID factor will have worked its way out of the game, the free year, that – what we have seen to this point over the last 3 years is, in these cases, you're right. It's a guy who I rode the bench at Florida, played a little bit, but it never really happened for me. And so, no, I'm going to transfer to Central Michigan and be a stud. There are so many other options for Central Michigan. You're right. This guy is falling down to Northern Arizona or to Savannah State, et cetera. And in some cases, down to Alabama State, FAMU at Furman, Western Carolina. It's an entire drop in classification as well.
The other thing I thought was interesting, again, we're going to have so much more of this a week from now, but there are some kids who are kind of getting the jump, just saying, I'm going to let it be known that I'm going to be out there. Damian Martinez, running back for Oregon
Stud.
State, went into the portal, or at least, you know, let him know he's going in when it becomes official. First team All Pac-12 last year. And the part that was interesting, Chuck, was that Pete Thamel reported for ESPN he was set to make more than $400,000 at Oregon State this past year. You've heard lots of names. You've heard lots of rumors. I can't remember somebody explicitly reporting that, basically saying he was going to make X at this place, and so presumably now he's going to make more at the next place. This is one of the things the NCAA has been claiming that they would like to see, is basically a salary database so that, you know, you'd know if you're star tailback at school X what your peers were making, and if a school says that they are going to give you this money, Does that match up with what they're paying other kids? I wonder next week if we're going to see more of this kind of reporting, because normally it's in the interest of both parties to keep it closer to the vest, what's going on. I wonder if that's about to change.
Yeah, and this was I don't want to say shocking. No, but he'd already announced he was returning to Oregon State, and part of it was because of the money. I believe the initial report of this was done to set the market. I think whoever was given this bone, this nugget, and include the $400,000 so that anyone courting Martinez will know where the price starts. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for David, wrap it up for Heath, all of our guests, you, me. 22 hours from now, though, we'll all be back right here talking college football on Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.